we as the people here, you know, I'm on the borderline between Coot Valley and Ferguson. We're just saddened by what has happened totally, and would just like for somebody or just bring this person to justice and just say, hey, like, what really happened? I mean, you're a police officer. If I'm a police officer and somebody's unarmed, I'm not going to shoot him down and kill him. I don't care whether he's black or white. I mean, it's end of the day, you didn't murder the unarmed teenager, and all you had to do was just, I mean, you fired rubber bullets and tear gas into a crowd. I mean, you could have gave a warning shot, anything. I mean, not take the innocent life. I mean, young man, I see if he had a criminal history, police record. Young man was an honor roll student on his way to college.
All right.
You know, and this is not the first time they've got a teenager. They shot a teenager in the city 25 times, honor roll student, you know, and no one has been brought to justice for that, you know. So this is something that we really have to take a look at. This is not happening in St. Louis. This is happening all over the country.
And mostly in predominantly black cities. I've been speaking with Antoine Polk for, he is familiar with Chicago Alliance Against Racist and Political Repression. And he's given his on-the-ground report on what's happening in the city of St. Louis, where Michael Brown, an 18-year-old African-American unarmed teen, was shot and murdered. We'll do more follow-up on this closely. I appreciate you, Antoine, for giving us some more update, and we look forward to hearing more from you all shortly.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. And you have been listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, in-depth news. Stay tuned for Out Loud coming up next.
Tune in Wednesday, August 13th at 2 p.m. when KBOO's Rita Rega will be talking to impresario George Ween, the creator of the Newport Jazz Festival. Listen to what this eyewitness to jazz history has to say about his festival and the film Jazz on a Summer's Day, playing Thursday, August 14th at the Clinton Street Theater. Again, that's George Ween, interviewed by KBOO's Rita Rega, Wednesday, August 13th, 2 p.m., here at your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Have you heard about the Melting Pot Silent Mobile Dance Parties?
Silent dance doesn't sound very fun.
Actually, it's a lot of fun. Picture 200 people dancing with headphones to the same music. The Melting Pot Radio Show will have a series of silent dance parties from 8 to 10 p.m. Tuesdays in Portland parks and public spaces. That's Tuesdays from 8 to 10 p.m. For more information and this week's location, go to kboo.fm/silentdanceparties.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland's Gay Directory, providing a resource guide of openly gay-friendly businesses, organizations, and services since 1996. New smartphone app available for all iPhones and Droids. For more information, you can visit gaypdx.com.
What's up, everybody? This is Goddess and She, and you're tuning in to KBOO Portland. Holla at your girl.
Oh. Hello, dear listeners. Welcome to Out Loud, your queer news and culture radio program here on KBOO. Tonight, we're going to be chatting with Jackson and Alexis about trans services provided by the Cascade AIDS Project. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us, Alan. It's really great.
Yeah, thank you. It's really nice to be here again.
All right. We'll be back in just a moment. Dearest listeners, thanks for joining us. That plug for Silent Disco a moment ago reminds me that it's just weeks away from the beginning of Thriller Practice. Every year I organize, this will be the eighth year, this community-wide thriller dance, part of a simultaneous, coordinated, worldwide thriller dance. Dozens and dozens of towns and cities in the world, including Camas, which does a very elaborate themed thriller every autumn. Anyway, we do lessons for about a month beforehand. You can also learn online. We're on Facebook, thrilltheworld.com. Why am I telling you about this? For 8 years, Thrill the World Portland has been a fundraiser for SMRC, Portland's Sexual Minority Youth Resource Center. So if you decide you want to join us in dance, you have the fabulous opportunity to donate some money or raise some money for SMRC as well. Also, SMRC, Sexual Minority Youth Resource Center, is moving. And if you're interested in finding more out about that, if you want to participate in the conversation, they're looking for youth who want to help them figure out where to be next and what they should be doing, smyrc.org. And if you want to come dance Thriller, if you want to dress up as a zombie, come have some fun, help us raise a bit of money for SMRC, thrilltheworld.com. Is the national website, the international website. You can find lessons there, thrilltheworld.portland on Facebook. And I have a WordPress, but I rarely update it for that event, so I have no idea what it is. Jackson, Alexis, welcome. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Alan.
Thank you.
Yeah. We're going to talk tonight about services for folks in the trans community at Cascade AIDS Project. Why don't we start by finding out a little bit about each of you? Who are you?
I'm happy to start. My name is Jackson Mitchell. I am an HIV prevention specialist with the Cascade AIDS Project. So my role there is to do HIV testing and counseling, helping people kind of find ways to reduce their risk for acquisition or transmission of HIV that work for them, that are realistic for them, as opposed to sort of that Pollyanna model of do that, don't do that, shame on you. I also do a lot of outreach within the sex worker community. So I'm a member of the Sex Worker Outreach Coalition, and I help to run clinics in Washington and Clackamas and also Clark counties, so outside kind of satellite testing sites that people can come to get HIV testing. And some of those sites also offer syphilis and full STD screens. So that's kind of what I do.
And sorry about that. I am a volunteer HIV tester for the Cascade AIDS Project. So I do many similar things to Jackson, just a lot less often and on a much smaller level. But I provide HIV testing and sex counseling, just like Jackson, on the nights that I volunteer.
Mm-hmm. And define sex counseling for us.
Sex counseling sort of goes into people's sex practices, assessing their risks factors for acquiring HIV and various other STIs, and then also talking with people about if there's ways they would like to change their risks, if there's anything they would be willing to do to be safer, but working completely within the constraints of what the person wants to do and what they're willing to do, not us telling them to do this, do that.
Sure, and folks are attending these events voluntarily, so these are, I imagine, gentle conversations, and how persuasive they are is really up to the folks who are coming by. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I mean, when I've done testing, there's a lot of variation in that counseling portion of the testing, and it's entirely based upon the client's comfort level, what they're willing to speak about. If they don't really feel comfortable having the counseling, that's fine. We can talk about other things with them while they wait for their test results. you know, we don't have to go into detail on the various risk assessment and sex counseling unless the person wants that done.
Yeah, we really try to keep our prevention counseling client-centered is the sort of model that we use. And also, we work with so many different populations that the issues that we're kind of confronting or we're broaching are really going to depend on the folks that we're working with. So if I'm working with an injection drug user one day, and that's the main issue that they want to work on around their prevention prevention strategy, then that might be what we focus on. Whereas, like, if I'm working with a cisgender man who also has sex with cisgender men, then we may talk about different ways of negotiating safer sex practices and kind of looking at it from a spectrum of risk and a kind of a cost-benefit analysis to help people figure out where they're most comfortable kind of following along that, but also making sure that they have a sort of a holistic grasp of what that spectrum looks like and adjusting misinformation and also sort of helping to kind of set goals and coach folks around challenging themselves in ways that they are interested in changing behaviors.
How did each of you come to do HIV prevention work?
Well, I started at CAP about 2 years ago. I relocated to Portland from Austin, Texas. And back in Austin, I worked prior to working at CAP, I did nonprofit work with an environmental organization. And prior to that, I was also an HIV prevention specialist at AIDS Services of Austin, Texas. So I was working with very similar populations and also very different populations, being so much closer to the border and kind of a community that had a lot of different types of stigma around sex and sexuality and queer sex and substance use. But I really just came to it. I came from a gender studies background. That was my major in college, and it was work that I was drawn to, and I really love the personalized kind of nature of connecting to people over things that are hard to talk about but really relieving to talk about when we can kind of normalize it.
As for myself, not long after I moved to Portland, I actually got a temp job at CAP helping people navigate all the changes in healthcare that had come about because of the ACA. After that temp position ended, I had requested to stay on as a volunteer, help out in any capacity. I had really fallen in love with CAP, in love with my coworkers, and I think it's just sort of something about being in a building that's filled with nothing but people who really care and want to help others. It makes you want to do something as well.
Touching on the ACA, the Affordable Care Act, how do I phrase my question? It's closed right now to new enrollment, but it opens back up again this autumn. Is that right? Do we know?
It does and it doesn't. So it's closed to new enrollment for qualified health plans. So folks who are not eligible for the Oregon Health Plan and need to buy a plan will have to wait until autumn to buy a new plan. If somebody is under the threshold of about $16,000 a year income as a single person, then they're eligible to apply for the Oregon Health Plan at any given point. And CAP actually has enrollment assistance that'll help people within the LGBTQ community to kind of navigate that and help them look at what plans might be best for them in their situation, without advising, but also within the kind of context of like cultural appropriateness when it comes to things like trans healthcare, which are often not necessarily spelled out very explicitly when we're looking at insurance plans. So
wonderful. So let's talk a little bit about Cascade AIDS Project's trans inclusion strategic plan. What's the sort of the overarching goal here of what CAP's heading towards?
Well, I can talk about the strategic plan and what CAP is planning externally with the community. Mm-hmm. One of the biggest things is we are starting what we're calling the Trans Community Nights at Pivot, which is on 208 Southwest 4th Avenue in downtown Portland. And these nights will be the first and third Monday of every week, every month, from 4:30 to 7 p.m. And we are kind of going to be doing a mix of things. We're always going to be offering completely free and confidential HIV testing to anyone who comes in who would like that. But we're also planning to do things more fun, more community building. So having movie nights, having get-togethers, doing clothing swaps. We're also planning to try and help like in educational and life skills ways. So like planning nights for dating nights where you can talk about the issues you're having with dating and try and get advice from other trans people in the area who may have more experiences, may have different things they can tell you about. We'll keep people up to date on any changes in healthcare laws as they relate to transgender healthcare. So if you come in, you're always going to be able to stay very informed, very up to what your rights are, what your options are. So I guess overall what we're doing is we're trying to help make the community safer by being more informed and actually having a place to gather as a community.
Yeah, in terms of sort of our strategic plan that we're still working on developing and implementing ACAP, we're in the process. I'm sure that your listeners have heard that we have just brought on a new executive director, Tyler Tremere, and we're in the process of doing a 5-year strategic plan organizationally. And one of our highest priorities is health equity. So within that health equity segment of the plan, sort of trans inclusion and improving the trans competency of our services is sort of a pillar. So we're looking both externally and internally, I think, at the ways that we are that we're serving, that we're including, that we're representing, that we're doing our darned best to make sure that we are best serving and preventing infections and providing quality services to the trans community in terms of HIV prevention, and health equity just plays a huge part in all of that. So we're looking at policies and procedures in terms of how we navigate sort of supporting our trans employees, myself being one of them. We're also looking at ways that we're continuing to sort of engage the trans community under a sort of model of public health that has historically been a really gendered model and a gendered around a binary, right? Like HIV prevention has always been about like men who have sex with men. MSM is the acronym that public health uses, and categorizing infections based on population. And now we're sort of looking at like how do we both like put people into the silos that we need to understand where those infections are happening, but also honoring all the different identities that are coming to the table and making sure that people are seeing themselves reflected and represented in the work that we're doing here, and creating spaces that are welcoming and inclusive, because not all trans people are going to feel comfortable walking into a space that's been branded as a space for guys who are into guys. And so we're trying to kind of address in really honest and humble ways some of the historic neglect and distrust that's happened in HIV prevention and that CAP has been a participant in, and also sort of look to the community and ask the community itself, what are your needs? How can we better serve you? How can we improve, and how can we do right by you?
I think a question for every service organization is how do you reach out and find the folks you want to serve? How do you make those conversations about what will make folks feel welcome, feel like they want to participate? Where's CAP on that? You know, what does that look like for CAP?
Well, one of the ways that CAP does that is by going to where people are, going to the communities they live in, going to the events that they go to, and being there to talk to people and to help them like know what their options are, know what help is available, and know what CAP has to offer. I myself have actually done some outreach doing that, and it's always really fun. It's always a blast. I mean, even at the Pride very recently, you know, we're helping people and educating them, but we're also doing games, having fun, and, you know, actually just getting to talk.
Yeah, and I think that how do you find people? That's kind of like that million-dollar question in community organizing, period, whether it's HIV or any other issue that affects marginalized communities. And I think in my experience, the most honest answers to that are breaking down that us-them paradigm. I don't want to go out and find those people. I want to go out and find ways to better engage my people, and I want to be a part of an organization that I see myself reflected in. And I think that people want to participate and engage in an organization that they see themselves represented through. So part of that is that right now, part of my role this month and the next coming month is to help sort of reestablish what we've had a pivot is a program of CAP that historically was the Men's Wellness Center and has been through several iterations, but it's sort of transformed more into it's a space for both men who have sex with men as well as all trans people, particularly trans people who have sex with cisgender men, to access community support, HIV and STD testing, and lots of different kinds of programming. And sort of within that, I think that our role is to help that become a space that that is reflective of the community and bring our own people into that. So we're working on reconvening the Dormant Pivot Community Advisory Board, which is a group of community members who are all volunteers. The commitment is about 2 hours every month, and that's essentially the steering committee for Pivot. And so those folks help set the priorities for our organization and tell us, hey, you're off course. You need to, recorrect back this way or that way, and really make sure that channel of communication is two-directional and it's not just us delivering programming that we presume is the appropriate programming for the communities that we're serving.
Wonderful. Tell us a little bit about the programming that CAP is offering right now.
Well, we have several programs. One program that we launched last year, and it's still sort of a quiet program, but I think it's an important one, is that we have a trans-specific hotline that we especially created for trans women, but it's open to all trans people, and that is around accessing HIV testing. So what we found in sort of discussions with kind of community gatekeepers and community members is that some folks aren't going to feel comfortable despite a lot of different kinds of efforts that we make walking into those doors, into a space that they still associate with gay men or men who have sex with men, to access testing. But these are people who are incredibly vulnerable and need to access those services. So we've created this hotline so that people can, trans folks specifically, can call and set up a one-on-one appointment to do HIV testing. And we've also heard a lot of feedback that the trans community, and particularly trans women, are accessing the new home test kits that are available over the counter, which is great because that removes so many of the barriers to testing. And people are being tested who have never been tested before, and they're being able to do that maybe with their own peer support rather than in a clinical setting. But in the instance that one of those tests comes back reactive, we need to make sure that we have some sort of mechanism in place to support those folks. Not only in getting confirmatory testing to make sure that test was accurate, but to help folks kind of connect to services and figure out what the next steps look like. So we're using this hotline to direct people to CAP staff that are particularly experienced and have a lot of expertise in working in the trans community. So that number is 971-231-5458. If folks feel like they need to access that's something that we have available. We also have started what's called the Trans Community Night. We call it TCOM is how we've sort of branded that event. And that's the first Monday of every month from 4:30 to 7 p.m. And that is a trans and gender nonconforming, exclusively identifying space and event where people can come for community support. There'll be discussions, resources, connection to services, and also HIV testing is available there. And then also the third Monday of every month during that same time slot, Pivot has reserved what we're kind of considering to be community-driven, identity-specific programming time. So it's not necessarily time that we have scheduled or structured programs, but we're leaving that time slot open for community members who identify a need. If there's a group of trans men who feel like they would like to host a group on sexuality during that time, the space is available for them to have a self-directed group that we will host and can be peer facilitated. And we're really wide open to kind of proposals and ideas around using that time slot, but we're reserving that time specifically so that we can make sure that we're keeping space in our calendar for the community to define their own needs on those situations. We also offer the enrollment assistance that Alex has mentioned, and we have a lot of sort of experience that we've accumulated over the last 9 months or a year or so around helping trans folks navigate the cover organ system and kind of gain some literacy around health insurance, which is really specific to sort of the needs of trans people, especially trans people who are pursuing medical interventions. And then we also have a program called Chat PDX, which is for youth 24 and under. And the Chat program is recruiting right now for the next cohort of, we call them sexperts. They're peer mentors around sex and sexuality education with a strong emphasis on sort of gender justice and discussions around gender. And that next cohort will be starting in September. So if there are folks who are interested in that, they can go to the Chat PDX Facebook page and find an application to get involved with that program.
Wonderful. Alexis, you've been at the last couple of TCOM events doing testing.
Yes, I have. And they've been a lot of fun. We've had quite a number of people who have shown up for the two nights that we've done so far. And at both of those, as it's still kind of starting, we've been more focused on kind of letting people know the space is there, letting people know what's available, the various things that Jackson just got done mentioning, and also kind of having fun social nights. So far it's been, you know, a lot of time to like talk, to play games, to just sort of get to know people, and also to give us your opinion of what CAP should be doing, which is something that CAP is definitely still taking people's advice, people's opinion on. If you're a trans person and you have an idea, if you have something that you think should be happening, just stop by Pivot and tell someone, and they'll make sure that that idea is heard and that people actually look into it. Also, just sort of want to take a moment, since Jackson mentioned at-home testing kits, to give a shout-out to Monica Megahertz, whose organization, Trans Women in Real Life, or TWRL, has been helping trans people who don't quite feel comfortable going into a healthcare setting to get tested, but also can't necessarily afford those home testing kits, to actually get those testing kits anyways, and to know how to properly use them and read the results. So again, that was Trans Women in Real Life by Monica Megahertz. Just Google search it.
And is that a local organization?
Yes, it is. It's one that was just recently founded by a local trans woman. So as I said, Monica Megahertz.
Wonderful. Yeah. That's great. TWRL. So check that out online if that is something you want to look into. We're going to take a break, and I'm going to come back, and we're going to talk a little bit about HIV and STI prevalence in the trans community, prevalence and prevention. Thanks so much for tuning in, dear listeners. We'll be back shortly.
You only
Welcome back to Out Loud. Thanks so much, dear listeners, for tuning in. We're here on Out Loud, your queer news and culture radio program on KBOO. You can find us on Facebook, KBOO Out Loud. You can also find archives of all of our programs going back indefinitely, I think. We just celebrated 10 years not so long ago of Out Loud. So we got lots of archives on our website, kboo.fm. You can also stream the show. If you're listening on the radio, you can always slip over to your computer and listen to KBOO online from anywhere you are. So please check us out, KBOO Out Loud on Facebook, and we'll keep you up to date on what we're doing. And we put in a little bit of stuff on what's happening around town. There's so many events nowadays, though, not like it was when I first got to Portland in the early 90s. There's a great community calendar that Q Center puts together. PDXQCenter.org, do we know if that's the right website? I always want to say it's Q Center PDX, but I think it's PDXQ Center, and I get it wrong every time I go to a browser. Anyway, they have a great community calendar, so you can get a sense of what everybody's doing, all sorts of events in Portland these days. So it's really great to see. Jackson and Alexis, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Alan.
We're talking about trans community services and health services provided through Cascade AIDS Project. That's a pretty great conversation to be having. So tell us some about the experience of HIV and STIs in folks in the trans community. And maybe if you want to put that in the context of overall health and wellness experiences for folks.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's a huge topic, and it's also a really salient topic, I think, within the trans community. We spend a lot of time talking about healthcare access and healthcare justice, and HIV is certainly a really critical component in terms of all of that. When we're looking at what we call HIV prevalence, or we call it HIV seroprevalence when we're talking from a sort of a public health lingo perspective, that sort of means the percentage of people within a population who are HIV positive. So if we were to look at the general population of North America, for example, to kind of give you like a baseline for what HIV seroprevalence looks like, if you took all the adult population in North America, 0.6% of them are HIV positive. So less than 1% is generally what we're looking at in terms of a more homogeneous population. But when we start to break down those populations into subpopulations that are a little bit more vulnerable because of health disparities and health equity issues, then we start to see real distances in those numbers. And so what has become more and more important within the trans community when we're talking about HIV prevalence is being able to better understand what that seroprevalence looks like in our communities, because our communities haven't been studied in nearly the way that most other subpopulations who are considered vulnerable for HIV have. So historically, just in the last 10 years, it's been less than 10 years now that the CDC and health departments and all of these organizations who are responsible for determining priorities when it comes to allocating HIV prevention money and programs and creating interventions that are intended to help people prevent infections, the data that they've collected to make those determinations hasn't ever counted how many trans people are HIV positive, how many trans people are newly infected. They haven't counted trans people at all. Really, trans people have been generally, I would say, it's fair to say that they've been rolled into the category of MSM, which is men who have sex with men, which is not an accurate indicator of the community, right? Like, where both trans men and trans women have been rolled into MSM. And then the other part is, right, that when we're looking at programs that are broken down along these gender binaries, people are accessing healthcare and they're accessing sexual healthcare based on their gender identity and not necessarily their behavior. More and more recently, we're finally starting to get some data that tells us what we all anecdotally know, which is like the trans community, and particularly trans women, are in dire straits when it comes to HIV infections. So we just, in 2007, there was finally a meta-analysis of these 29 different smaller studies that happened all over the United States. So there has not been really one sort of quintessential, like, large study around HIV transmission in the trans community. And so what these researchers did was they said, well, the best we can do is take all of these smaller studies, and then we're going to do our, like, statistical magic to sort of do lots of, like, tweaks and controls to make sure that we're comparing apples to apples when it comes to all of these studies, and that the data is kind of it all matches up. But what they found was that like I said, 0.6% of the general population in North America is HIV positive. Over 11%, almost 12% of transgender women self-reported HIV infection. So that means that they knew that they were HIV positive. But what was really interesting about the study is that it went on to then follow up with testing. And what they found was that 27.7%, almost 28% of trans women within these studies were HIV positive. So that's four times what we're seeing in any other community. And then they broke it down by racial demographics, right? Because when we're looking at things intersectionally, we know that those things make a difference. And they found that almost 31% of Black and African American women self-reported HIV infection. That is, they knew they were HIV positive. And when they followed up with the testing, 56% of those women were positive. So nearly, what is that, 26% of them didn't know that they were positive until they had gone through this process. But we're also seeing just an incredible injustice when it comes to the fact that this is already an incredibly marginalized population that experiences homelessness and poverty and mental health issues and all of these other cofactors, substance use, that all the things that go with disparity anyway. And then for all of this time, they haven't been counted, and we hadn't done any research to even document what is going on in terms of HIV infections in these communities. And when we finally came around to do it, we realized, oh my gosh, we have kind of been blowing it. And it's time for us to take a good hard look in the mirror and try to figure out why we got to this place. And whether you're coming at it from a policy perspective, a public health perspective, in which case your priority is to prevent infections kind of outside of any sort of moralistic framework, or whether you're coming at it from a humanistic framework where it's like, no, these are communities that are incredibly vulnerable, and like, within the LGBTQ community, what have we been doing to advocate for our own people? Who have we left behind? The very beginning of the AIDS epidemic was all about self-advocacy. Like, people who were first infected had to become kind of their own researchers. They had to become their own experts in the field to figure out how to advocate for themselves within a healthcare system that, like, is full of experts that may or may not necessarily be interested in listening to them. And here we are again now in 2014, and it's time for us to be doing the same thing. We have to advocate for our own communities and become our own researchers and experts and doctors, because nobody's going to prioritize this if we don't do it.
Alexis, you were talking a bit earlier before we started the program about the kinds of studies that have been done on trans folks, and
yes, and as Jackson mentioned, there haven't really been any studies done. There've been a few. The CDC is starting to look into things, and they're really starting to work at it, but still a lot's not being done. I mean, for example, with these studies, they don't even break down by the sexual orientation of trans women. If you look at any other population group, this is an important thing. You know, it's not just saying, hey, here's trans people, but who are, you know, trans people and trans women specifically having sex with? Because not all trans women are straight. Not all of us are, you know, attracted to and having sex with, you know, men. So this is something that is kind of ignored and can hide these results. Another real major issue is a lot of these studies tend to put too much of a focus on sex work. And That is a completely valid area to look into, and that is completely an area that needs help and needs, you know, people in a healthcare setting advocating for them. But it also completely ignores all the trans women who aren't sex workers, you know, because the stereotype isn't true. We're not all sex workers. And so it's ignoring other things that are going on. It's ignoring power dynamics in relationships that might lead a trans person to be willing to take extra risks just because they found someone who wants to be with them. It's ignoring, you know, issues to do with homelessness. It's ignoring issues to do with, like, the sharing of medical equipment. And, you know, because there are trans people who, you know, have so low money and have no help at all. So they're having to reuse injection needles for their prescription medications. They're having to share those with other people. And that just increases someone's risk of acquiring HIV, other sort of blood-based illnesses as well. And none of these things have really been looked into any detail yet. And these are things that are really going to have to be looked into and are really going to have to be talked about if we actually want to see something done and see the trans community, see our community be helped.
And the other thing I'd really love to see, I agree with you so much, Alexis. I think that we really need to be looking into all of those cofactors and issues. The other point of research that we're not seeing is, where is the research and data around the resiliency of trans communities and the ways that we have, like, supported and helped and advocated for ourselves and each other and sort of done our outside of a sort of clinical setting, taking care of each other? Because those are also really important, I think, points or factors or data that we don't have and we don't have any access to. And there's so much time spent on all of the ways that we are falling apart as a community as a result of these really oppressive factors that, you know, in many ways are out of our control. But I also want to know, what is it that helps us succeed? What is it that helps us to overcome and sort of surmount some of these barriers? Because we need to be able to translate those to each other.
No, definitely, Jackson. I mean, it is very much a tragedy, but all the focus is also always on, like, the suicide rate of trans people, and nothing is on the strengths, on the resiliency. Like you said, you know, none of the trans people I know, trans men, trans women, non-binary, you know, trans people, genderqueer people, they're strong people. You know, we go through all sorts of problems and issues and societal discrimination, and we're still getting out of bed every single day and living our lives in a way that's true to ourselves. And that's inner strength that's needed to do that in the face of a world that tells you you shouldn't, isn't even looked into at all. Mm-hmm. All right.
Oh. What do you think that would look like to start capturing those stories?
I would really like to see trans people being willing to get involved in things like the It Gets Better campaign, being willing to talk about their lives and their transition and not just focus on the negatives of transition, but on the positives. I mean, I know for myself, ever since transitioning, I've been happier than I've ever been. I've been more well-adjusted socially. You know, I feel that overall I am a better person and I love my life. And I'd love to hear more trans people talk about those things so that those who are questioning, those who are unsure of who they are, can look and know that it's not just all doom and gloom and all of these very sad statistics. There's good things too. There's a lot of good.
I'm just a data geek, and I really like to see sort of some sort of, like, tangible numbers around the different factors, whether it's the age of transition or family acceptance or size of community or reflected role models or whatever those are, so that then we can start to really deliberately craft and create community-based interventions to support folks when they're coming up against these obstacles, and ways that we can have some confidence that they're going to work. And I know that the God of science can't answer everything, but at the same time, to me, there's something that feels it gives me a sense of power and control to be able to think about the different ways that I can support other people who have gone through some of the things that I've had to go through in measurable ways that may actually have an impact on the outcomes of their health and their mental health and their survival and all of those things. And I think it's really awesome to just have the opportunity to sort of celebrate and measure how awesome we are as a community.
Let's talk a bit about how Cascade AIDS Project came to be thinking more intensively about members of the trans community and providing service.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's been a long road for us, and I know, Alex, you've been a part of that as well. And I think that I think some of that sort of evolution and transition has had to do with new staff who have come in who have had sort of more of an acute sensitivity to the trans issues. I think that it's had to do with some community feedback that we've had over the years, and that we've sort of more and more put on our listening ears and been willing to sort of internalize that. I also think that it has to do with a lot more of the research that's come out that's validated what anecdotally trans people are saying, which is like these approaches aren't always working for us, or there are better approaches that might be a better fit for us. I guess I've been a cat for 2 years, and so I feel like I've seen a strong evolution just in the last 2 years. I've also seen a lot of hiccups and a lot of sort of growing pains, because it's really hard to take that moment to be self-reflective and look at all the awesome work that you've done and recognize that the ways that you can improve don't detract from the ways that you're great. And I think that that's the place that CAP is in right now. And I think that's the place that Portland as a community is in right now. We're kind of self-congratulatory as a community. And also we have a ways to go and a lot of work to do. And we need to, you know, pull up our boots and get to it.
Mm-hmm. I know that for the time I have been with CAP, it isn't as long as Jackson, but I came in there and I saw a lot of really great people who wanted to help. I saw people who cared about the trans community, but they didn't really know what to do. And I kind of saw what Jackson saw, is new employees came in as there was sort of fresh blood, fresh ideas, you know, all of this desire to help kind of coalesced into something more real and turned into something of CAP actually trying to improve themselves, trying to help the community, really looking at things and thinking about what they're doing and why they're doing those things and whether or not they really help everyone.
Getting to a little bit of a bigger picture, as you mentioned, Jackson, Portland as a whole, outside of just CAP, what would you like to see for each of you, I think? What would you like to see develop for trans community in Portland?
Man, that's a huge question. And there's you know, I moved here from Texas. I moved here from Austin, which is, people say not Texas, but I have to say, having lived there for 9 years, it's still Texas. And Portland has done some amazing advocacy and has really developed some awesome policy work. There's been amazing activism here. There's a ton of some of the most innovative conversations around gender that, you know, are happening in the country, I think are happening here in Portland. And I think that I would really just love to see a lot of that sort of streamline and coalesce into a plurality of cohesive action. So I think oftentimes in my experience here, there's been a lot of internal conversation and dialogue and sort of very esoteric conversations around gender and the needs of our community. But I'd really, I mean, of all the places in the United States or the world where there should be a homeless shelter that serves gender nonconforming people, Portland, Oregon is a place that could happen. So I would really love to see that more concrete community organizing coming out of Portland. We have so many great ideas. We have so many strong opinions. And I'd really just like to see ourselves get organized in a way that that could actually set some goals with some like measurable benchmarks and be able to accomplish the things that, that we're all frustrated with.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely agree with Jackson. And similar to Jackson, you know, before living here, I was living in this like small rural community in Eastern Washington. And if you've never been to Eastern Washington, well, you're not missing much. Sorry, Eastern Washington. But so when I came here, it did seem really great and it seemed amazing at first and it seemed so much more open. But one thing I've really started to notice is that the trans community here in Portland is very fragmented. There's some things and some events that'll happen, but they're not really coordinated. They're not really connected together. You know, a lot of people don't know when they're happening. So I guess what I'd like to see is more just of an interconnection, more ways for people in the trans community to get together, to get to know other people, to have that knowledge that there is a support base here in Portland and that this is a place for them and for us.
Mm-hmm. Why don't we remind folks of the specific events that CAP is lining up for the trans community?
Yeah. So among the biggest things are our Transgender Community Nights, or TCOM, which happens at Pivot, which was on Southwest... That was on 208 Southwest 4th Avenue in downtown Portland. And these events are happening on the first Monday of every month from 4:30 to 7 p.m. as sort of like an open to the entire trans community night. And there'll be HIV testing, there'll be fun games. We're want to be hosting workshops on issues that actually affect trans people. Then also on the third Monday of every month, we're kind of holding the space open for community input and community-driven events. So if there's a group of trans people who want to do something, want to put something on, there's a space where they can do that. We can host it, and it's here in downtown Portland, so it'll be easy for people to get to. And besides those things, there is also our Trans Pacific Hotline, which phone number is 971-231-5458. And you can call, you can get advice on HIV testing, you can talk to someone, you can set up an appointment to actually have sort of like counseling services if you need to, based around, you know, HIV, other STIs, and your sexual practices. There's also our Chat PDX program, which is for queer trans youths that you can get involved in. That happens every second and fourth Monday from 3 to 7 p.m. And that is also there at Pivot. You can also get involved in various like peer mentoring programs through the chat program if you're under 24 years old. Just go on to our website at cascadeaids.org and look for the chat PDX program. Mm-hmm. Was there anything I missed there, Jackson?
No, that's great. And chat PDX is also beginning a new cohort of peer mentors starting in September, so they're accepting applications now. And I believe that that application is available on the chat PDX Facebook page.
What where do you think CAP will go next? Are there plans for expanded services from here on out? Are there plans in the works?
I think that a lot of that is going to be driven at least within the Pivot program, which is our prevention space down on the bottom floor, by our community advisory board and the priorities that are set there. So we're really sort of just trying to constantly examine community needs and be responsive to those in a way that is sort of culturally humble and community driven. And we're also, like I had mentioned earlier, in the process of this 5-year strategic plan, agency-wide strategic plan that includes a really strong health equity component. So along the way, we'll be setting goals that hopefully will be informed by the feedback that we are getting from our clients, both our positive clients who are accessing housing and support services, as well as our clients who are accessing prevention and testing services on a regular basis.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of health equity, how much does Cascade AIDS Project work with medical providers, insurance companies to create a climate and an attitude of health equity?
So my role is in with prevention and education, but we also have an entire department. Half of our organization is dedicated to housing and support services. So that means that those folks they're tireless. They are really hardworking case managers who essentially help people navigate housing programs for people living with HIV and sort of negotiate with landlords to be able to utilize those programs. And then we also have job access programs that help people look for work. We have folks who help sort of navigate the Care Assist program, which is an organs, AIDS, drug assistance program that helps people afford the medications that they need when they're living with HIV. So we certainly have very comprehensive services, and we work really closely with a lot of different community partners in terms of being able to help people access those services. But mostly, we're just advocates. We're there to help them out and help them figure out the system. And if we don't have the answers, we can refer them to folks who do.
Yes, definitely. As Jackson said there about that, we can refer to other organizations, other community partners, people who can help. And so we have been collecting together a resource list of any sort of trans-related help or advocacy work in the Portland area, so that even if you are a trans person who is not living with HIV, you can come in, you can talk, you can ask about those, and we can try and help, like, direct you on where to go, who can help you, and just, you know, let you know that there's someone at least listening.
That's pretty fabulous, that resource gathering. Do you have last thoughts for our dearest listeners today as we come towards the end of Out Loud?
I would say, to me, it's, and this is to everyone, not just the trans community, is get tested. All of us have a status, and you should know yours.
Yeah, I certainly agree that prevention and education is incredibly critical. Also, just we really want to have community engagement, and we want participation, and we want to sort of find ways to heal some of the sort of historic neglect that has happened in terms of HIV prevention when it comes to the trans community. So we're really just open to hearing your thoughts. We'd really like to work with anybody who'd like to be involved and reach out to us and let us know what your needs are so that we can be as responsive as we can to them.
All of the events we've talked about tonight for members of the trans community, all that information is on CAPS website.
Most of it you'll find on the pivotpdx.org website, which Pivot is a program of CAP. You can also find more of this housing and support services information on the CAP website.
Mm-hmm. And that website address for CAP is cascadeaids.org.
Cascadeaids.org. And the Pivot website is?
It's pivotpdx.org.
Great. Well, thank you, dear listeners. As I said, thrill the world if you want to come thrill with us. That would be fabulous. Next week, Carla will be here hosting Out Loud. And thank you so much, Alexis.
Mm-hmm. Oh, thank you. Mm-hmm. And also, I guess, just one last time,
yeah.
Look up Monica Megahertz and Trans Women in Real Life. They're another group here in Portland who is doing a lot of good.
Wonderful. And thank you, Jackson, so much for chatting with us.
Yeah, thanks so much for taking the time to talk with us today.
It's been wonderful. Hard Knock Radio is up next. Dear listeners, thanks so much for tuning in to Out Loud.
Hey, And you are tuned in to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River in the Gorge, and 104.3 Philomath in Corvallis. And as always, heard on the around the world at www.kboo.fm. Up next is Hard Knock Radio.
We're now approaching Newport, Rhode Island.
KBOO and the Clinton Street Theater are proud to present one of the great concert films of all time, Jazz on a Summer's Day, a documentary of the 1958 Newport Jazz Festival. Jazz on a Summer's Day captures the music, the crowd, and the essence of such jazz greats as Louis Armstrong, Thelonious Monk, Jerry Mulligan, and Anita O'Day. Jazz on a Summer's Day, Thursday, August 14, 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street, Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under